Welcome to Engineering Conversations. My name is David DeMontigny, and I am an engineering professor at the University of Regina. Today we're doing something a little bit different. I have invited Lucas Hollinger to come and speak with me. He is a local grade 12 student who is interested in engineering, and I thought it would be fun to get a high school kid to come in and ask a bunch of questions about engineering. Lucas, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I'm really happy that you were able to do this for me. And before we get started with your list of questions, why don't you just tell everyone a little bit about yourself? So how did you maybe get interested into engineering? What are your hobbies? Those sorts of things.
Sure. I think I got into engineering around grade 10. Just math and science has always kind of interested me. To be specific, kind of the environmental science kind of thing. I also play sports. I've played basketball for most of my life. I've played on many teams at the Leboldus High School. And I also play club basketball, like just outside, travel lots.
Cool. That's good to know, because to get into some of your questions, one of the things that students often wonder is, can I continue to play sports in engineering because it's such a busy workload? And the answer is yes, but we'll get into that in more detail. So I understand that you have a list of questions for me about engineering and things that young kids like yourself might be wondering about if they are going to go into engineering. So let's get started with some of your questions.
Yeah, sure. First question I got is, a lot of people see kind of the engineering field as like a big payday, but a lot of people don't actually know like what engineers do. So what would an engineer do in a day's work?
Really good. So first of all, it is true that engineers can make really good money in their career. It's a very stable career. The day-to-day work is going to vary depending on who you work for. So for example, some engineers are out in the field. So they're actually at the plant or at the factory, and they're checking on the machinery and they're making sure that everything is working properly on a day-to-day basis. And they might be involved in maintenance or upkeep of the plant. They might be doing expansion projects at the plant or something that is requiring them to be physically on site. But I know a lot of engineers who work in the office downtown, for example, and they're doing their design work, they're doing their economic analysis, feasibility studies, and they may occasionally go out into the field to check on the site. And so really, it totally varies from one person to another, depending on what career they're in, what projects they're working on, and even the field of engineering that they might be in. So it's hard to define it in a box.
Well, thank you. Second question is, after you'd graduate with an engineer degree, what steps need to be taken in order to start working as an engineer, whether that's in the field or in kind of in the office setting, like you said?
Right. So this is a great question. So within Canada, each province or territory has something called a regulator. So they regulate the practice of engineering and in some cases, engineering and geoscience in the province or the territory. So here in Saskatchewan, it's called the Association of Professional Engineers and Geoscientists of Saskatchewan. If we were in Ontario, for example, it would be called the Professional Engineers of Ontario. So as I mentioned, every province and territory has one of those regulators. When you finish your university degree, you apply to one of those regulators to become a member. Once your application is accepted, you are then called an engineer in training. And, you have your job, you have a boss, and you start working on engineering projects. And then there's a process that goes over 4 years where you work as an engineer in training, gaining experience under the supervision of a professional engineer. After 4 years, you submit your work experience reports and you write a professional practice exam. And if all of that is successful, then you become a professional engineer. So it's very similar to how a doctor might go out on a residency and gain experience that way. And lawyers do their articling for some period of time before they write the bar exam. So it's done that way. And the nice thing about the accreditation system for engineering programs in the country is if you graduate from an accredited engineering program, you are automatically eligible for membership in any one of those provincial or territorial associations. So, for example, you might be going to school in Saskatchewan and you decide you want to move to British Columbia. No problem. You apply for membership in their association. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
I think we can really be proud of that system here in Canada.
Yeah, and just to kind of rewind to all that, how would you even pick an engineering program in the first place?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, right? So in terms of picking a program, it kind of depends on your interests, right? So, you know, for example, some people are interested in the environment. Some people are interested in electronics. Some people like to build things and work with machinery, right? So depending on your personal interests, you might pick which area of engineering that you want to study. Now, let me ask you a question. How many engineering schools, accredited engineering schools, do you think we have in Canada? Just take a guess.
I'll say 25.
Okay, so there's actually 45.
45.
So in the country, there are 45 accredited engineering schools. That means that they are certified by the Canadian Engineering Accreditation Board to deliver an engineering curriculum that meets the standards, right? So we actually have 45 schools in the country, which is amazing. Now, of those schools, how many engineering degree programs do you think exist?
Programs? I'm going to say like over 100.
Oh, wow. So that's a good guess. Most people say like 10, right? Because you think of like, you know, civil or mechanical or chemical or whatever. So you're the first person who has guessed such a high number. There are 87 different degree programs in the country. So when I say that, I mean different. So, you know, civil, mechanical, electrical, industrial systems, environmental systems, petroleum, nuclear, like whatever, right? 87 different programs. And so here's an interesting number for you. If we look at civil engineering, for example, which has been around forever, there are 32 of those 45 schools that teach a civil engineering program. There are 37 of those 45 schools teach electrical engineering, right? 20 of those 45 schools teach chemical engineering. And mechanical is also very popular. 37 of those 45 schools teach mechanical. That's a similar accredited program at like 37 different schools. So if you know, for example, you want to study mechanical, then like pick. Like where do you want to go? What city do you want to live in? You know, if you're from the prairies, maybe you want to move out to the Maritimes and go to Dalhousie and take mechanical and eat a bunch of seafood for 4 years, right? So we're really, really fortunate to have a huge selection of programs in the country. And I just want to mention to you a couple of other interesting things, like the diversity of the programs. So, for example, in Quebec at Laval, they have a program called Wood Engineering. Like, what's that? Like, I've been an engineer for almost 30 years, and I assume it has something to do with pulp and paper, but what an interesting program. They also have a program called Food Engineering, which presumably is related to the processing of food and distribution of food for sale, right? Western in London, Ontario, has a program called Green Process Engineering. Space Engineering. There's only one school in the country that has that, and it's York in Toronto, right? Let's say, for example, you were interested in studying ocean engineering or something like that. There's one school in the country that has a program called Ocean and Naval Architectural Engineering. Guess where it might be?
I mean, I want to say on one of the either east or west coast, but I feel like it's not.
No, you're right. It's in Newfoundland, actually, at Memorial, right? And it makes sense, right? Because they're out there on the ocean. I should mention that of those 87 programs, we have 5 of them here in Regina. Our programs are called systems engineering programs, and in the country there are actually 13 different systems engineering degrees. In Regina we have 5 of them, and they are electronic, environmental, industrial, energy, and software systems engineering. So you might want to check some of those out. Which school do you want to study at? Really depends on what do you want to study at. If you're picking an area that is only offered at one or two schools in the country, well, then guess what? You're moving to that city, right? But if you're picking something like civil or mechanical that is offered literally at like over two-thirds of the schools, then maybe you go to Edmonton because you've got an uncle who lives there or something like that, right? So does that help?
Yeah.
Kind of makes sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Cool. All of that information that I mentioned is publicly available. If you go to Google and you type in Canadian accredited engineering programs, it will take you to the website for the Canadian Engineering Accreditation Board, and you can see which programs it offered at all of the engineering schools in the country.
On to the next question. Once you become an engineer, what's kind of most important set of skills, let's say, to have working as an engineer or as an engineering student who's still working for their degree?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'm going to divide the skills into two parts. There's technical skills, and that's really what you're going to learn in university, because that's, you know, your calculus and your physics and your thermodynamics and your fluid mechanics and electric circuits and whatever it is that you're studying for your discipline. But then there's a set of soft skills, and those would be things like communication skills, time management skills, so scheduling, you know, keeping projects on time and on track, right, on budget. That's another set of skills that is not necessarily taught in a class. I mean, it might be, but those are the sorts of things you learn by gaining experience. So I like to make the distinction that there are the technical skills, but then there are the soft career skills, and both are important. Both are very important. When you're a university student, obviously time management skills are something that pop up as a challenge. And what I mean by that is that just managing all of the workload. So you got to go to class, you got labs to do, you might be working a part-time job, you might be in sports. So how do we manage all of that? Time management skills are critical, in my opinion, for being successful in university. Within the career as a professional, when you get out there and you start working, I always like to refer people back to the code of ethics, the professional code of ethics, and all of the things that are listed in there that the profession expects of you as a professional. So, you know, doing your work to the best of your ability, asking for help when you need it, only working in your fields of expertise, being ethical and having integrity in your work, and respecting your colleagues and professionals, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So engineering is, I mean, it's obviously more of a difficult thing to study over like other things. What is something that you'd say to anybody who's kind of second guessing going into study engineering with kind of like a fear of failing?
Right. So there's a couple of things I'd like to say here. I think studying the topic area, like the level of difficulty, is relative. Because if I would have, for example, gone and studied a degree in psychology, I think I would have found it very difficult, because my brain isn't wired very well for that. It's better wired for math and science. So I just want to clarify that difficulty is a relative thing to the individual. Now, why does engineering have a reputation for being so difficult? It's because of the workload. In addition to taking your five classes, you're taking labs in almost all of your classes as well. So it's kind of like having 10 classes. So it makes the workload a lot heavier than if you were in another program where you only had to take classes and you didn't have laboratories. So that's probably why engineering has a reputation for being so difficult.
I mean, yeah, I guess that makes sense, yeah.
And that's why that time management piece comes into play, right? Because you got to manage all of that stuff plus your normal life stuff.
Yeah. Do you think you could kind of take me through the process of being assigned a project as like once you graduate and you're an engineer? Could you take me through the process of being assigned a project?
Sure. So obviously when you get near the end of the program and you graduate, you start thinking about looking for a job, right? And, you'll get hired somewhere for sure. And you'll be assigned a boss. And your boss will give you the tasks that you're going to be working on. And obviously the nature of those tasks is going to be a function of the type of company you're working for. And you'll start to work on those tasks. But you do it under the mentorship of your boss, your supervisor. And this is where that engineering training piece comes in that I mentioned earlier, is that, yes, you will be given engineering tasks to do. You'll be expected to work on them and figure them out and solve those problems. You'll be expected to ask for help when you get stuck. And then your boss, who is the professional engineer, will oversee and overlook your work to make sure that things are done correctly. And he or she will sign off on it. So as an engineer in training, you're never really signing off on the project because you're not qualified to do that yet. You have to be a professional engineer to do that. And I think that's an important message to give people because it's comforting to know that, yes, you're expected to do the work at a very high level, but you did just graduate from university and you don't have a ton of experience. So you're going to be given small projects to work on. And over time, they will increase in depth and in breadth and levels of complexity as you yourself work towards becoming a professional engineer. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that kind of nice to hear that?
I mean, yeah, you kind of think like you're just kind of out there and everyone expects you to do the best, no mistakes.
Yeah, well, and I mean, in order to avoid mistakes, good rule of thumb is you ask for help when you're not sure, right? Mm-hmm. And also keep in mind, too, that a lot of projects are done by teams of engineers, not just one person, right? So there's a group of individuals involved in the work, and together they achieve success.
Sure. I mean, we kind of covered this already, but what's the workload as an engineer during university and then also post-university once you begin working?
Good. So I can definitely answer the during university part maybe better than I can afterwards. During university, it's true, engineering does have a heavy workload, but you don't have to take the whole load. You can take 4 classes instead of 5. To manage your time. We have a lot of student athletes. You mentioned earlier that you like to play basketball.
Yeah.
Let's say, for example, you go to university somewhere, whatever. Maybe you're in Calgary and you're playing for the Dinos and you're on their basketball team. You're probably not taking a full load, but that's okay. You're playing basketball and having fun. And if you meet with the faculty advisors, you get advice. So here in Regina, at our engineering school, we have lots of student athletes who will only take 4 classes a semester instead of 5. And sometimes they only take 3. But they meet with the advisors to plan the program and make sure that they have the prerequisites when they're supposed to have them. And so they finish in 5 years instead of 4. It's not the end of the world. And that's one way that you can manage the workload. Plus, not go crazy studying all the time. Because you got to take a break and go to movies and play sports and hang out with your friends, right? And the other thing is, what I see from our students when they graduate and they go into industry, you know what they're mostly happy about?
What?
They don't have homework anymore. They have a normal life. I mean, yeah. They got like an 8-to-5 job. Usually they go to work, they do their job, they go home, no homework. So I don't know that the workload after university is crazy. And that's not to say that you're not going to have busy times as an engineer, more stressful times when you got to go in at night or on the weekends to get the job done. But people live a very good, comfortable life, not going crazy, right? Now, you said something earlier, I don't know if it was this question or the previous question, about like what can I tell students that they can be successful or how to manage the workload or whatever. So, like, we just met today. Oh, by the way, we should tell everybody, this wasn't planned. I just met you. Like, this isn't like some magic trick where we like came up with all of these questions. Lucas legit showed up with a list of questions that I didn't know about here today. And we just met for the first time. But when you look at me, do I look like a normal guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. And sure. I went through an engineering program. Right? Like, I'm not a superhero. I'm just a normal person.
Yeah.
And I did it. So there are actually hundreds of thousands of people across our country, and then, you know, millions around the world that went through an engineering program. They're not superheroes. They're just normal people who had an interest in STEM, so science, technology, engineering, mathematics, whatever, had an interest in problem solving, had a very high drive to succeed. And sometimes you just got to kind of buckle down and get the work done, right? And they graduated. I honestly don't think that there is a student out there that can't be successful in an engineering program if they go to class, sit down and do their homework, and ask for help when they need it. Those three things are the recipe for success in university. And arguably in life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. This question's a bit tricky, as, I mean, the answer could change in about a year, but which fields of engineering like have the highest demand?
That is a tricky question, because it varies with the economy, right?
Yeah.
So, for example, like 5-6 years ago, petroleum engineers were having a hard time finding jobs, right? But
yeah.
Since then, the oil prices have gone up, and it's gotten better. I know back in the 80s, the economy wasn't so good, and people were having a hard time finding jobs, and then the economy turned around. So it's very much cyclical. For right now, as far as I know, environmental engineers are in demand, as they are in the manufacturing sector. So our environmental systems engineers and industrial systems engineers are getting jobs. Our electronics systems program, the students are getting jobs. And software, by the way, yeah, software is booming. So there's a high demand for software systems engineers right now. And the energy sector is a little bit more unpredictable, but it's starting to stabilize compared to like 5 years ago. And don't forget too, Lucas, that when you come into university, so you're going to come into university in the fall of 2024.
Yeah.
The market could be completely different in like the spring of 2028 or 2029 when you're going to graduate.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't base your decision solely on that.
Sure. I mean, that's all the questions I had coming into this.
Great. Well, I think it's been awesome.
Yeah.
Really happy that your guidance counselor hooked us up and that we were able to do this. I want to wish you all of the best in your decisions start to think about picking a university and where you're going to head off to study. And I wish you all the success. You can do it. Yeah, and for everybody else listening, you can do it as well. So I hope that this session has been useful. My guest today was Lucas Hollinger. He's a local grade 12 student who is interested in engineering. And he came in today to ask me a bunch of questions. And that was wonderful. I hope you will join us next time on Engineering Conversations, when my guest will be Dwayne Gelowitz, an environmental engineer working in the consulting business. We'll see you then.